Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to yet another edition, version of Bill Roden on Sports here at MetLife Stadium, where, actually the Giants pulled a rabbit out of the hat thanks to the great Odell Beckham. We'll talk about that a little later here with, of course, my co-host, Jamal Murphy.
Good to be here. Exciting day of football, NFL.
That's right. Here with sound guy Kevin Keating, keeping the sound right. And Raisa Kelly making us look good and recording everything fit to record. So we're all here as one happy family. So it's interesting. So, of course, today, you know, when we were plotting out the day, we're thinking, well, of course, the big story is out in Buffalo. No offense, Raisa, who's from Buffalo. Never is a big day in Buffalo. But
actually, Rochester.
Oh, she's from Rochester. Now she's from Rochester. But so we thought, Colin Kaepernick was going to be starting for the first time, and you thought, oh man, this is going to be, you know, that's going to be the lead. And I mean, it was, but they got destroyed, man. I mean, they lost 45-16.
Ouch.
Oh, and his number's okay. I mean, you know, he hadn't started since 2015.
Right.
His number's okay, right?
Yeah, he was 13 for 29. 187 yards, a touchdown. He also rushed for 66 yards. First half was much better for the whole team. I mean, they were right in the game. It was a game for the first half.
Right.
I think he started off like 8 for 11 or something
right
like that.
So he adrenaline.
Rusty.
Yeah, he's real rusty. And then when he scored the one touchdown, this Twitter world was going wild.
Yeah.
One for the revolution.
Exactly.
And blah, 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 blah.
There were some Twitter beefs out there. You
that's
know
right.
I mean? I saw Gottlieb from CBS and Bomani from ESPN. You know, little tension in the room, in the Twitter room.
Right.
Kaepernick, the Kaepernick issue seems to really touch people on both sides.
Yeah, well, you know, people, I think even you had some, well, we talked about it, and we'll get to that later on in another segment, that a couple of people had things to say about it. But you know, interestingly enough, you know, things got back to football.
Right.
Tyrod Taylor had a sensational game.
Yeah.
He kind of put the revolution on the show. Because who's about the police to the your boy, right?
McCoy, LeSean McCoy, Shady McCoy. He was very shady. His actions were shady. He reportedly invited about 20 policemen to the game beforehand. He said it was planned before he knew Kaepernick was going to start, but it was a big coincidence. So he tried to put the pressure on Kaepernick and the movement, and he showed up.
Yeah, he did show up.
He showed up, and you mentioned before a lot of that probably had to do with he was facing his old nemesis,
Chip Kelly. I mean, I think that was a big thing. He just wanted to like shove it down Chip Kelly's throat. But you know what? It doesn't matter if he scored a million touchdowns. Chip Kelly is still, you know.
That's true.
He's still there, and he's going to get another job when he gets fired from San Francisco.
But
actually, the big story was really right here.
Right.
Right here, man. Giants win. It was a record-setting Dave Eli Manning. But Odell Beckham, man, you know, crazy but entertaining. Odell Beckham came through, man. This guy.
Oh,
He
came through all right. He had 8 catches for 222 yards. Okay, and that's the biggest game I can remember seeing. Julio Jones had 300 receiving yards a couple weeks ago, but besides that, that's you're not going to see too much of that. So,
but the game winner. I mean,
and the game winner. Yeah, I forgot about that. 66 yard game winner.
Game winner.
66
man.
Yard slant.
Yeah.
Game winner. Like Eli said in the press conference, he hit him in stride a couple of times. Good for Eli, finally hitting people in stride. And it can go a long way with that.
That's
so,
right.
I mean, people have been waiting for this Odell Beckham to show up. He showed up in a big way. I mean, 222 yards, man. Come
That's
on.
Big. And I actually asked him, I know for all the Giants fans, when he finally showered and came after about an hour, I asked him, did he think this team was finally hitting a stride? And he gave an interesting answer.
I think we're on the way. it's just a matter, you know, this is only one game. You got to go out next week and, you know, do the same thing. And that's the only way you're going to be able to tell if you're hitting the stride. So, you know, we got a tough challenge next week in London against the Rams. They're a good team. And should be a fun opportunity, you know, Twickenham Stadium. I'm looking forward to everything that comes with it.
Well, after all the analysis of your play and some of the antics that was going on the first month, having a game like today, over 200 yards and a couple of scores, do you think you made a statement now that it's really all about football?
I don't know. I go out there and I'm going to play the same way every time. I don't think I really, I don't think I played any different besides me being injured. You know, it was the same passion. I just tried to, I think because I was hurt, I couldn't express it as much as I wanted to. You know, I couldn't even yell to my coach and tell him something. It just, like I said, God's good.
And somebody else asked him, because, you know, so much of his career, his early young career, like he said, he's only 23, has been so much, you know, just bizarre stuff. Kissing the net. In fact, he's still doing it. Yeah,
he made love to the net.
He made love to, and he actually, this is, we have a cut where he, I think Gary Myers of the Daily News asked him about, what was that about? And so Dale went through a whole thing about how he actually, this is what he said about his relationship to the net.
You know, our relationship's growing. I thought we might as well make it serious. I proposed, she said yes. So, you know, me and the net are gonna get married sometime soon. You know, just hopefully it all works out. I'm 23, I don't know much about marriage, but she seems like a pretty good gal.
You'll have interesting looking children.
Yeah, they'll be nice, blonde net-ish.
Yeah. So that was very sweet.
It was very sweet, bizarre though. I mean, his brother's bizarre.
With a straight face, he was saying all that.
Yeah, I was waiting for the laugh. Okay, you wait for the laugh. Yeah,
maybe he's serious.
Maybe the first human being to get married to a net.
Exactly.
A kicking net.
I mean, people have their little, you know,
fetishes.
Exactly.
Fetishes. Yeah.
Ask Rex Ryan.
Yeah, that's right. His was a feet.
Right.
He's a foot fetish. Some people like the net.
I might take a net over feet, personally.
That's another podcast.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I can't get it. Well, no. but yeah, no. So, he's bizarre. But Foley, maybe one day we'll get Odell on the show. He kind of explain his thing, but you know, he's a hell of a receiver.
And you know, as we saw today in the locker room, he's a superstar. He was the only show in the locker room.
Right.
He takes over the middle of the locker room.
I know.
We have some footage of that. We'll probably show you. And then, of course, Deion Sanders. He does this thing on NFL Network where he Skypes guys at the end of the game, and that became an event. And so.
That was bizarre.
Odell
too.
Beckham's just sitting in the locker room talking to Deion Sanders on the phone, and everybody stays.
All the reporters
and
were
tapes it. I taped it. Everybody taped it.
We were there. Of course, you know, I had like dinner reservations. So I was like, "Come on, gang, we gotta get the hell out of here, man."
Right.
But it was a good day at the ballpark for Giants fans and Ravens. You know, we'll talk to Mike Preston a little later, who covers. The Ravens, he'll tell you about that train wreck, because this may have been the beginning of the end for their coach, their head coach.
Well, they're both 3-3 now. When I coming into this game, to me, it was basically two average teams, mm-hmm. Giants 2-3. They were 3-2. Now they're both 3-3. We don't know what this means for either, because neither one of these teams is a good team.
Even Pittsburgh lost.
You
never can tell. You know, and
Panthers lost. They're 1-4. They lost to Cam Newton, was back from a concussion. I thought that they would blow out New Orleans. New Orleans wins, and now the Panthers are 1-4.
1-4. I mean, but see, I know they're playing down New Orleans. So
right. So you never know.
There's a whole. The Saints are a completely different team.
That's true.
When they're indoors. So again, you know, this is week six? Week six. Week six. So there's still so much to play. Again, I still think that Eli, you know, has one more Super Bowl run in him, and you can never judge him by regular standards, because normally they end up terrible, and then they stumble into the playoffs, and then they have this Super Bowl run. So this year has been up and down. Today was an up day.
And he broke records. He passed Elway in I think yards or touchdowns. He set a touchdown mark. Threw for over 400 yards. today, 3 touchdowns. So I guess you're right. Maybe he has. I thought he was dead.
Well, no, Lee, he's never dead. He's just erratic.
Right.
But he said some interesting things. I guess we'll pull up some sound just so everybody can. He always says the same stuff. But
right. So maybe we
just
won't.
For the record, maybe we won't. You know. But yeah. So that's it. You know, we thought Kaepernick was going to be a big story, and still, I mean, the idea of issues he's raising is still a big story. Of course,
right.
We've talked at least 2 or 3 podcasts now about the next level.
Right.
What's next? And I'm going to be writing about that for The Undefeated, in a column I'm working on about what I think should be the next step.
Right.
But the next step is for us to take a break and to get the hell out of here for a minute. But we'll be back. We'll be back with my friend and colleague from the Baltimore Sun, Mike Preston. And, of course, we'll be followed. We'll follow with a segment. You know, Jamal did some time in Brooklyn with the Nets.
Some time.
And some time with the Nets, and he did a little more time with the Knicks. So we'll, for all you Knicks fans, we'll have a little bit of that. But, so here we're at MetLife Stadium. It's a good day at the at MetLife.
Yeah, everybody leaves happy.
Everybody goes home a winner. So we'll be back in just a couple seconds, and we'll see you on the other side. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Bill Roden on Sports. We're here at beautiful MetLife Stadium with, of course, you know, Jamal Murphy, co-host. Yeah.
Thank you. I'm still here.
And the down, of course, the regular crew, Raisa Kelly on camera, and Kevin Keating on sound. And joined with a special guest, great guy, long-term friend and colleague from my old paper, the Baltimore Sun, the legendary Mike Preston.
You're talking about me?
Yeah,
you're
talking about you.
Legendary.
Yeah, no, man. All right. Well, after you leave, when you leave, then you become legendary. Now you're a legend.
No, when I leave, I'm going to become an icon. I'm going to take it up to another level.
An icon. The iconic Mike Preston. Man, Mike Preston is, we've been knowing each other forever. He's been at the Baltimore Sun almost as long as I was at the Times. He joined the, first of all, he's from Baltimore, which I didn't realize. Over the many years I knew this, he was just telling me, A, I didn't know he was from Baltimore, but you were in Baltimore, you went to Kenwood High, then you went to Towson, and I also didn't know not only you were on the football team at Towson, but you were the captain of the football team, which, you know, he made it a point to tell me he was the captain of the football team.
As you should.
3-year starter. Yeah, you got to tell your captain.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
You know what I mean? If you don't want to tell people that, right. You shouldn't have played, but right. It's an honor to be a captain.
Right.
Yeah.
A true leader.
Yeah.
You were elected captain, right?
Right.
You weren't appointed captain.
It doesn't matter.
I was a captain and an offensive lineman. That's even more special.
Right. An offensive tackle, because I didn't know all this stuff, man. How good were you guys when you were there, when you were at Towson?
By the time I left, our class had the highest winning percentage of any class at Towson. As a matter of fact, it still might be the best. I don't know what we were, but I think we were 7-3, 8-2, 9-1, and unless you were 5-5.
Wow.
So we were pretty good.
You were pretty good. So you did have a trial, right? You went to you had a spin with the pro football, right?
Yeah, I went to the Canadian League, Montreal Alouettes, back in the old days with Tom Cousineau, Billy White Shoes Johnson.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think you had like 11. You could have 11 Americans on your team.
Mm-hmm.
So I go there. And, of course, I'm from a small school. Mm. But our helmets had the T on the side. So I kept telling everyone I was from Tennessee. You had a better shot of making the team if you had that T on the side. Man, you from Tennessee. Yeah. And I got down on the last cut.
Nice.
And then I got sent home and then just said, hey, it's a long shot. Let's get started on a journalism career, and then that's how I got into business.
So at Towson, you were a journalism major at Towson?
I was a communications major.
Me too. So
I went into broadcasting. I wasn't very good. Mm-hmm. And then I went into the newspaper business because my teacher told me my stuff was very good, was well-written.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, hey, I'm not going to cry about it. I'm going to try this. So I've been there ever since.
Oh, that's great, man. Yeah, I think, like I said, 83, you went there part-time, and then 87 – because they put you on the clock, right? The full-time
clock. They finally figured out that I could write.
Yeah.
I actually knew what I was doing.
Right. Who was that? Sam Davis, the sports editor there?
He is the managing editor now.
Sam Davis?
Yes. You didn't know that?
Oh, man.
Sam is the man.
Sam is the man. Boy.
And, you know, he started out like I did, as a clerk.
Exactly. That's when I knew him.
One year before me. And then he just worked his way up. And he was the sports editor. Then he became the assistant managing editor. And now Sam is the guy.
Man, that is one of the most incredible stories. Because you're right. When I was there from, I think, 78 to 82. And I think at that time, Sam may have joined late. But he was like a clerk. Not a clerk, but, you know, whatever the position is when you're, you know.
Your gopher.
Yeah, gopher. I didn't want to say that. Yeah, but then as a managing editor, that's remarkable. He's from Baltimore too, right?
Mm-hmm. Carver High School.
Wow, man.
That's a great thing.
It is. It's a wonderful thing, and kind of particularly in our business, particularly in sports, man. Because keep telling people, when you go to these press boxes, they're not a lot of black folks in these press boxes.
Not, especially when we started out.
Oh. Yeah, it was almost non-existent.
And most of the African Americans who started out, I don't know where you started, but we all had to start covering high schools. It's not like, you guys can't cover anything else but high schools. You have to start out at the bottom.
Right.
And we did, because that was the way to get your foot in the business and work your way up. Mm. And Sam was a year ahead of me, but Sam wasn't a very good writer. Mm. And he'll tell you that.
And he's had to been there for a long time to be able to say the managing editor couldn't write.
Oh, heck yeah, man.
Because every editor thinks they can write.
Right.
So well, why do y'all think you became editor? Now, I know people, how am I going to say that? But
that's true, though. And he knows that. And I was, like, biting right on his butt of taking that position, that writing position. And he just said, hey, no, let's make room for him. I went into management, and he's been my boss. And we're very good friends all the way through.
Mm.
And doing well, and you know, I've had my own share of success. So we're two of the guys that can actually that stayed in their hometown, worked for the local newspaper, and finishing pretty well.
That's great, man. That's really a great story. Let's talk about the dismal news first. I mean, the Ravens. Yeah, you've actually been covering the Ravens for how long?
Ever since they came to Baltimore. Actually, I covered them the last year they were in Cleveland. I had to go stay in Cleveland when they were still burning down the stadium and calling Art Modell all kind of great names there. I had to stay in Cleveland for the last 6 weeks because, remember, the news was announced before.
Right.
They actually moved. And then they came here, and I've been covering them ever since. But I was the beat writer for 3 years. And then once Brian Billick came, I became the columnist.
Those were good times. Mm-hmm. The Billick times.
Right.
Oh, there were good times for Brian Billick. we had our things going, man.
Okay.
I mean,
okay.
And you know, you're a columnist. If you don't get in an argument with a head coach or players, then you're really not doing your job. It's not like you set out to do it. But if you see things and you write what's in your heart, you're going to have fights with people. Right. And Brian took it a little personally.
Yeah, yeah.
And so did I.
Right.
You know, if he jumped me, I'd jump back. I'm from Baltimore, man. Right. We like to fight.
Now, you from East or West Baltimore?
I'm from East Baltimore.
I'm
an Essex kid out there in that tough part of the town. But we like to fight.
Right. But you didn't go to Dunbar, though. You skipped over that. Skipped over that part of East Baltimore.
Yeah. That was a great school.
What was Kenwood, a private school or something?
No, it was a public school, but we had very good football teams and very good wrestling teams.
Mm-hmm.
And when Brian came to town, he made a point at going out after me because he knew I was kind of the voice of that team. And he liked to fight, and I liked to fight. So it was two guys that just kept going 9 years. Wow. Boom, boom, boom,
really?
Boom.
There's never any peace.
Still isn't any peace. Wow. I don't think we've spoken to each other since he left.
Wow. What was your main critique of Billick? And he really couldn't walk on water. I know that. But what was your main critique of Billick, and what was his main problem with you?
Brian, as a football coach, great motivator, great organizer, but I didn't think he was a great X's and O's guy.
Mm.
But he was the right guy at the right time for Baltimore because you had Ted Marchibroda, who was near the end of his career, an older guy who had no communication, no rapport with the players. And then you bring in Billick, who has that electric personality, who loves all of these four-beat, five-syllable words. His faces are plotted all over Baltimore and billboards. Right. But the thing with him was, he made the mistake of the PowerPoint presentation of do not talk to Mike Preston. If you talk to Mike Preston, we will fire you. And that was for the assistant coaches and head coaches. Well, Bill, you know, I was pretty good friends with the players back then of Tony Siragusa, Rob Burnett. They would come out of the meetings and say, I can't talk to you. And I'm like, what? And he goes, because Brian said, you are a bad guy. And we talked to you. And they tried to get him to change the players and some of the PR people, and he wouldn't do it. So it was on. It was definitely on.
What was his point? Because at that time, what was his problem? Was something? Right. He didn't come in there. Well, you guys didn't come in there with your two issues, right? You come in, everybody's got a clean slate. What happened?
The thing was, if you're not part of the team, you're against him, and that was his way of thinking. And he was very popular in that town. And everyone loved Brian Billick, especially for the first 8 years.
Right.
And then here I go, and I'm the guy who kind of takes him on. And there are problems. And the biggest problem, and I told him about this, I said, Brian, you're going to keep doing that, but what you don't understand is 90% of your team is African-American, and you're putting my face up there every day. So you're putting that African-American face up there every day, telling them not to talk to me. You think that's not going to come back and bite you?
Well, what did he say to that?
And he just, we'll see what happens. And we did. We did. And it turned. It just kind of turned because I've been in a locker room. I know about players and what's going on there. So that was fine. That was just the way it went down.
Just as a – and we want to talk about these Ravens with Harbaugh. But just as a matter of coverage, as a journalism course, how do you deal with that? When you are the beat writer, then you become a columnist, you know, how do you deal with an adversarial situation like that? When particularly, like the Baltimore – sometimes, like at the New York Times, I felt, it was like this large nation.
They had to talk to you.
I don't even care. Right. I mean, I'm a writer. I really literally don't care, you know. But I think in your you have to – it's like fighting in a phone booth.
Well – I think you better be – you have to be aware of your age because when I was the beat guy, I was younger, so I still could have those relationships with those players. I kind of understood what's going on in their world. You know, now when I go out there, if I say the Beatles, they have no clue who the Beatles were. They have no clue who the Jackson 5 were. You have to talk to them about those things. So I've gotten to that point where I'm not going to build relationship with these guys because most of them – I'm old enough to be their father, I'm not going to try to establish that. But when I was younger, I was very careful of how I dressed. Mm. I dressed like a player, tried to fit in the locker room. Mm. Now, I'm like you. I don't give a darn. I just go out there.
This podcast, you don't give a damn. Yeah.
Better be careful where you're at these days, man. You know what I mean?
So what was the highlight of coverage? What was your relationship with Ray Lewis?
It was very good in the early part of his career. And you know how that goes. When they're young, okay, they like you because they're kind of finding themselves. But once they get a little big-headed, and especially at the end of the career when you have to start getting on them, critiquing them a little bit more to say, hey, you've slowed down, that's when that relationship becomes strained. Mm. Now, the really smart guys, they adjust. But the superstars, they have a tough time adjusting to that. And At one time, I could call Ray any time of the day, pick up the phone. Now, he won't talk to me at all.
Really?
No, not at all.
Wow.
Because it was the end of his career, and he's starting to slow down, and I'm jumping him a little bit.
So do you look at that positively where, I must be doing my job if these guys aren't talking to me?
Well, you just write what you see, and if they can't deal with it, that's on them. It's not on you. You just do your job. So, Ray, when I was writing those great things about you, you were a great player. You were the best player in the National Football League.
Right.
But at the end of your career, you're not the best player in the National Football League. And it's just nobody beats Father Time.
Right.
And not even the great Ray Lewis. So maybe when he gets a little older, we'll come back and have that chat and sit down and hug a little bit with Brian Billick. That will never, ever happen. Wow. Might start choking each other there.
Did you ever have a confrontation with Lewis, or he just said, I didn't like that, and I'm never speaking to you again?
You know, the thing with Ray is Ray would never say anything to me. And actually, when people would come in and say things about me, other players, he would take up for me.
Oh, wow.
But we knew it was strained, and I respected him for that, because there are a lot of times these guys could show you up. He would not do that. He would just let it be known that he disagreed with me, and I'm not talking to you, but he would never go beyond that, and I respected that as a man and as a player.
So let's talk about Harbaugh. I mean, you know, covered the great years with Billick, Super Bowl and all that. Now, what's it been like with Harbaugh? Because they've had success too. And from the outside, seems like a different type of person.
Very much similar as far as motivation. And John is more of a high school, a college coach. That rah-rah T-shirts with the names on them and all kind of slogans. More of a player's coach than Billick was at the end of Billick's career. You know, in the NFL, it's the bad cop, good cop. You get rid of the bad cop coach, you bring in the good cop.
Right.
John is more of a player's coach, knows his defense, knows his special teams. His weakness is offense, which is why he's had 5 offensive coordinators in 5 years. Tough year for John right now. Hasn't been in the playoffs 2 of the last 3 years. Has only had 1 winning season since they won the Super Bowl.
Mm.
And the heat's on him right now. It's turning up a little bit. So what happens with the Giants today says a lot about their season.
And you say, not being, I guess, known for offense. But it's to me, from the outside looking in, it doesn't seem like he has much to work with on the offensive side. I mean, you look at the wide receivers, they're really no-name guys. You got, Steve Smith is there, but he's old guy. How do you look at that in terms of personnel?
What the problem is they tie a lot of money up into veteran players that they still have to pay. So when you take a shot with Steve Smith, you're going to get what you paid for. You get a 37-year-old who's had an Achilles problem, who kind of ran out of gas the year before that, and you see him struggling right now and can still play.
Right.
But it's a matter of getting him out there. Elvis Dumervil is another guy who has some age on him. He's not playing at all.
Mm.
Played 1 game last week, and that's it. Terrell Suggs can play and defense the run, but still can't get after the quarterback. You're seeing a team that still is older, and they don't have those impact players anymore.
Right.
I mean, especially on offense. And part of that problem is, look where they've drafted before when they had those guys, the Todd Heaps and even the Ray Lewis's and the Jonathan Ogden. They were number 1, 2, 3, or 4 in the draft. When you start drafting back down because you win, you don't get those stars anymore. And that's what has happened in this franchise. And some teams they all go through their cycles. I think the Ravens right now are in a cycle.
Mm. Let me ask you, before we let you roll, you got to go back to this beautiful game out here between two. But you did a lot of Ray Rice stuff. And it's hard to – for a lot of people, right now everybody's talking about Colin Kaepernick. And you've been around – there's an issue that's just so big, and then it's like the whale that eats the other way. Then there's another story that's even bigger. But you were at ground zero, the Ray Rice thing. What was that like, covering that experience? And did that change your relationship with the organization? And has the organization changed since then? So it's really three things. What was like covering that? What was your relationship with Ray Lewis? Ray Rice. And then did that change your relationship with the organization?
My role with the organization will never change, because I'm the villain. I'm the Antichrist. I'm the guy who's going to hammer them.
Mm.
All right, that's the way it's going to be, and it's not my intention to do that. It's just that's kind of the way it has evolved.
Mm.
I had a very good relationship with Ray Rice. There was a time when Ray Rice would be out on the field, practice, it'd be very hot, and he would bring me water. That's a true story. He would bring me water. Hey, man, I know you're hot here. Have some water.
Wow.
And then all of a sudden, this happens, and you got to take a stance.
Hmm.
And I still say to this day, if Ray Rice wasn't on videotape, he would be in the National Football League.
Right.
But the tape was so damning to that guy.
Right.
And I believe he's a very nice kid.
Hmm.
I think he's a really good person. But a young guy who got caught up in alcohol, and it kind of took over for that brief time, and that's the end of their career. And what I say to Ray right now is what I teach my kids. It's all about consequences, man. You make a mistake, whatever you do, there are consequences for it. Well, you made that mistake, and the consequences are you're never going to play in the National Football League again.
Mm.
Now, what are you going to do? Are you going to cry? Are you going to curl up like a little baby? Or are you going to go out and say, hey, I'm going to turn this into something positive where I can go out and help other people. And he's actually done that.
Right. Mm.
But unless he goes to Canada, he's been out of the league 2-3 years. And the last year he played wasn't very good either way. So I think he's done.
Wow. Did your relationship, you had, I mean, he was giving you water. How did that relationship change? I mean, did you have to start coming down on him? And
you know? Well, you got to be critical, especially when he comes out and they have this story about, you know, the owner is supposedly trying to show some favoritism toward him, which wasn't true. But he got some bad advice. So I go out and write that column and say, hey, you're going to be blackballed out of this league because one thing you can't do, can't throw the owner under the bus. Okay, you can't do that. Wow. You can throw anybody else under the bus, you can't throw the owner because there's only 32 of them in the National Football League,
right.
And that's a nice little boys club. And when you mess with one, you're going to – the wrath of the other 31 come down on you.
Hmm.
And I wrote that, and he didn't like that. So, but again, that's just what we do.
Right.
You know, I mean, I didn't punch the girl. I just wrote the column.
Right. I mean, you mentioned the obvious, you know,
that's great.
The ramifications it had on Ray Rice's career. But how do you think the Ravens have come around from that incident? Or have they? Is there still a hangover?
You know, I think they've done pretty well. At first, initially, they did some really dumb things, but, you know, because they didn't see the video either. So they're talking about what a great guy Ray Rice is. He's a super guy. He's great in the community. We're glad he's a Raven. We really love this guy. Their PR guy, Kevin Byrne, came out and endorsed Ray. And then all of a sudden, they see the video and are like, oh, my goodness. Then everyone looks bad. Then you got to call the owner up. He has to have a press conference. Where? How often do you see that where the owner stands up and says, hey, I got to defend this guy. We got to tell you exactly what happened. And I think the Ravens learned from that.
Mm.
You know, because they went through it with Ray Lewis.
Right.
And then years later, the dynamics of the football changed. Social media, tweeting, blogging. You got to be aware of all of that. That wasn't around in 2000. And They didn't understand all of that. They do now because they've been through this, and they suffered, but they've come back. Mm-hmm. And the best thing about it is when you win, people forget.
That's right.
People forget
fast.
Right.
Lastly, so now Kaepernick. I mean, that's the whale that ate the smaller whale. Now it's been Kaepernick. He's starting today. This is his first time. Just personally, as a former athlete and all that. As a black man, what do you think of the whole Kaepernick thing? Then I'll ask you just what you've written as a columnist. But
I understand what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with the position he took, but I'm not using the National Football League as that platform, not at the national anthem. I think there are other ways he could have done it that wouldn't have been as disrespectful as I see it.
Mm-hmm.
But he wanted that. That's what he desired to do. I'm not into that, and I'm not into what has happened afterwards, where little kids are now doing it.
Mm.
What do you know about what's going on out here?
Right.
I've seen kids 13, 14 years old. Hey, they're not standing up. Why? You don't even know what you're doing. You're just doing it because you saw someone in the National Football League do it.
Mm.
I have a problem with that.
Mm.
I kind of like what the Chiefs owner said. It's my team, my stage. Hey, I pay you.
Mm. That sounds like boy. All he didn't say, the only thing he didn't say there was boy. He could have said boy. He just said.
Well, you know, I coach high school lacrosse.
Oh, right. Okay, and, I was going to ask you about that. Right.
And if my kids do that, you know, if they even threaten to do that, I'm going to tell them, no, this is our team, but I'm the guy.
Mm.
These are my rules, and you're going to abide by my rules. Mm. And if you don't, then you just got to go.
Now, these are white kids, black kids on your team? Rich white kids? What the hell are
these?
These are black kids.
These are all African-American kids.
Wow, okay. What school?
Newtown High School in Owings Mills.
Oh, wow, okay.
I've been there for 7 years. And let me tell you something, Bill. Bill, let me tell you something.
My God.
When I first went to that school, they had not won a lacrosse game in 3 years. They don't want to lacrosse game in 3 years because they have no JV. And all these people kept telling me, you're crazy. A black kid don't play lacrosse. You're not going to win anything. And I'm like, hey, one, I don't care about that. I'm trying to teach them to be men.
Mm.
But two, are you out of your mind? So 3 years later, we win the championship.
Oh, my God. And, really?
And all these people are flipping out.
Did you play lacrosse?
Never.
So how did you? YouTube?
Hey, you know, this is Baltimore, right?
That's what we're known for. Right. Well, you know, because remember when I went to Morgan had that famous team about maybe my junior, senior year where they had all the football players start playing lacrosse. And that's when they kind of broke through. I think that Morgan became like the only HBCU that was like in the top five because they had all these crazy football players, Stanley, Cherry, and all these guys.
They did great, yeah.
But Baltimore was interesting. They had it in the public school system. It was almost like an outlier that for some reason they had lacrosse in public schools. So all these guys from Cherry Hill and what was the school in on Edmondson Avenue? I mean, those public schools had these really good lacrosse teams.
Mm-hmm.
But you never played though.
No, Cherry Hill, Forest Park,
yeah,
Edmondson. No, I just went out, and that's how I got on the payroll. Was some people didn't want to cover lacrosse. What are you, crazy? Interesting enough, how I got on the payroll was Morgan State and Bowie in Western Maryland. At one point had the three worst football teams in the country. Mm-hmm. Each week.
After I left.
Yeah. Depending on who had to buy.
Right.
They had the longest streak, and no one wanted to cover them.
That's right.
And I'm like, you're out of your mind. I'll go cover this. Mm. And my boss goes, hey, you're doing pretty well here. And I'm sitting back there for 5 years being the gopher. And what are you, out of your mind? I played football, covered football. Mm. And that's how I got on the payroll. So, no, I'm very active in the community as far as working with kids. I come from a poor background, so I'm always going to go back and give. That's just the way I am.
That's great, man. I didn't know about the I saw the Newtown. You're wearing the Newtown. You're wearing your Newtown lacrosse thing.
Yeah.
You're the man, Mike. We sit with the man.
And we take donations, too, because we don't have a lot of money.
All right, Newtown. So where is that? In what part of
it? In Owings Mills, Maryland. I'm 2 miles from the Ravens complex.
Okay. And do they contribute?
Ozzie has been over and talked to our kids. John Harbaugh has come over and talked to our kids. Matt Stover has come over. And Terrell Suggs has come over and talked to our kids. So that's a great thing because, you know something, if you give kids confidence and you give them discipline, you got them. But if you go out there, you don't give them any direction, and they see through that, you can tell them all you want. I mean, and the thing was, I knew I had to give them something because I didn't know all the X's and O's. But if I gave them some discipline, let them have some fun, and brought some of these guys over, and they would say, he knows what he's doing. And they believe. I'd get them to run through the wall right now. they're good kids.
Oh, man, that's great. My guest, our guest has been the great Mike Preston, columnist extraordinaire for the Baltimore Sun, coach, lacrosse coach extraordinaire for Newtown. Is it Newton or Newtown?
Newtown.
Newtown High School, Owings Mill, Maryland. Just final question, man. We were talking before, as you said, it stunned you when you read that I had left the Times. And so, but it seems like you still, not that I didn't enjoy what I was doing, it was just time to move to another arena. But you still seem like you love what you're doing after all these years.
Well, you got to have a passion for it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's you know, people talk about Sam Lacy. He was one of the forerunners.
He was my mentor at the Afro.
But guys like you were out there who at the Sun, I don't know any African-Americans who came after you who were sports writers. But I knew about you and knew where you were. So when I'm watching TV and they say Bill Roden has left, and I'm like, oh my gosh, another institution has gone.
But then you
tell me you're still in it, which makes me happy because you're still involved. You're still doing what you love to do. So you got to have a passion, man. And anything you do, if you have a passion, you'll put in the work. If you don't, it gets boring. It gets old. Man, I'll leave you with this, Bill. I still can't believe I get paid to watch fat men beat each other. That's a great living.
Right.
That's fantastic.
No question about
it. When you tell kids that, I say, man, you know, I'm in South Africa driving around South Africa at the World Cup. At some point, I'm stopping. I'm like, man, this is amazing. Like, they're paying me. I'm going to fill out an expense report. They're paying me for doing
it. Right.
Super Bowls. I mean, I wouldn't do it for free, but when you think of like sort of like a dream, like at the Sun, by the way, I was a jazz critic at the Baltimore Sun. I was a jazz critic, but it was the same thing. I was like at concerts. I loved the music. I was doing, you know, and I'm like, this career is just a phenomenal, it's just a phenomenal career. So listen, man, we're going to let you roll. I know you got to watch these guys try to play football. But I must tell you, man, all the years I've known you, you were one of the most solid guys one of the most solid guys I've ever known.
Well, thank you.
I mean, you just solid as the day. Everything you said here, just about following the truth where it leads. It ain't black. It ain't white. It's the truth. You're wrong. I call it out. You're right. I say you're right. That's just a remarkable. Just a remarkable lesson, man. And in what
you.
We do. No, absolutely, man.
Appreciate that.
Good, and a good brother too, by the way.
All right. thank you guys for having me.
All right, thank you, man.
Pleasure, all right. Pleasure's ours.
Nice meeting you.
We'll be right back. Thank you, Mike. This is great. Welcome back, MetLife Stadium. We're looking at a scintillating Jets, Giants, Ravens game. But I want to ask Jamal. I mean, you know, the basketball season is right around the corner, and Jamal took the initiative to go out to Brooklyn. Went out. You live in Brooklyn, but
it wasn't bad. 10 minutes.
He went to Barclay to check out the Nets, and you also went and checked out the Knicks.
Yeah.
So let's get a little. Many, you know, we always have to mention Knicks because we have a lot of, you know, we're trying to get to that 75K mark, folks.
Right.
But listen, give me a little, you know, about the Nets, man. Do they still have a franchise?
They still have a franchise. You know, they're holding on. They're obviously, the Billy King era kind of hurt them a bit. They're basically starting from scratch now. Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting way they did it. They don't have much talent. I mean, their two best players, their best player is Brooke Lopez. And their second star, in quotation marks, if you want to call him that, is Jeremy Lin.
Oh,
and
boy.
That, you know, part of that that star power is mostly, you know, social media or just, you know, just a brand. Because
right.
he's more of a brand than he is
that
a player.
That doesn't break you down.
Yeah, that's tough when Jeremy Lin is your second best player.
Though we do want him on the show. So
right.
But
you know, I'm just saying, you know, he's a solid player.
Like Mike Preston. You got to follow the truth where it leads.
Right, I'm following the truth, and he's a solid player. But he's their second best player. But they did surround them with a bunch of tough guys, a lot of veterans, guys who find their way on a lot of rosters and stay there, like a Trevor Booker, tough guy. Randy Foy's been around forever. Gravis Vasquez, a tough defender, been in the league. So they're not the type of team that, from watching them a couple games, they're a tough team, and they're going to be a team that that even good teams don't want to play against, and they're deep. Even their young guys, like Isaiah Whitehead, they drafted second round from Seton Hall.
How's he been looking?
Look good. Mm-hmm. You know, a couple preseason games he's played, looks solid, can play the point, but also just tough. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's the direction they went with their free agents and with their young guys. Mm-hmm. They want tough, no-nonsense guys. Hollis Jefferson is a rookie there, same type of mold. So they're going to, you know, talent-wise, they should be a 20-win team, really, when you look at it. But I think they probably squeeze out 30 wins somehow. And they're well-coached. The coach was, you know, assistant at San Antonio. So, you know, I think they're moving in the right direction. But they have other things going on, just like every other sport. We've been talking about Kaepernick, obviously.
Right.
But the Nets came out for their first preseason game, and they had a little, I guess, quote unquote protest.
Kumbaya, right?
Kumbaya. Yeah. Can't we all just get along like Rodney King? You know?
Yeah, like Rodney King. Yeah, can't we get along?
But
what did they
along?
Do? What did the Nets do?
They stood up, you know, during the national anthem, they stood up, had one arm around the other. Very, very
what
nice.
Is that? What
you
does
know?
That mean?
I don't know. You know? Can't we all just get along?
Don't rock the boat. Maybe that's what you should have played. Don't rock the boat.
Basically.
So what you said? You asked somebody.
Yeah, so, after that first preseason game, someone asked Jeremy Lin, you know, what was that about? Was that some sort of protest? And he said, it was a protest that the team had talked about, and this is what he had to say.
The unity you guys showed before the anthem, kind of what was the purpose behind that? A lot of teams are obviously doing as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something that's, I've spent a lot of hours thinking and talking with different people, but to me the biggest thing is it shows that I think we all can acknowledge that there is an issue that is at hand, but how you go about that is really what we try to do, is arms around each other, solidarity, we're doing it together. This isn't anti-cops, like this country needs cops, this isn't anti-minority, this country needs minorities, this is what makes our nation great. We need both, and we need more compassion, we need more empathy, or maybe not empathy, but we need more sympathy, where guys can take the time to really put themselves in somebody else's shoes. So if I'm, you know, a minority, I would, you know, I have to think about what it's like to be the wife of a cop who's, she's scared that her husband has to go to work. And if I'm, you know, if I'm, a, you know, the other side, I have to be able to think about what it's like to be a family member of you know, an African-American male who might get, you know, like, these are the things that we're not taking, like, and I think, like, right now what we're seeing is not, it's not everything, but there has been some division and increased hostility, and that, to me, is almost two steps forward, one step back. So, again, it's about solidarity. And it's not lip service, too. Like, we want to, like, we as a team, I as a person, we as an organization, like, we want to be able to do things in the community going forward to be able to promote the same message. Like, if I were to just sit there before the anthem and do that, I mean, anybody can do that. It would be fake, it would be superficial. But we want to be able to actually do something more and be more proactive about, and which we're talking about internally.
What the hell that mean?
Exactly. So, I mean, you could tell he meant, you could tell he means well. That's the right. The dicey thing. I mean, you can tell that a guy like Jeremy Lin means well and he wanted to do something, but the thing with those kumbaya moments is they don't, it's not really saying anything.
Right, yeah.
Like, what
which,
are you saying?
Which we're saying that I know who pays my salary, I know who pays my check, I'm a Harvard guy, I know right. that, you know, this is only a small part of my career, so I'm not going to rock the boat, I'm not going to burn it, but I'm an intelligent guy, so I'm going to give you a little bit of something over here, I'm going to give you a little something over here, and right. then I'm going to run for office, you know. And no, it's light. Well, it's kind of dark, too, but it can be light as well, but dark and light. But also, now, somebody asked him, you were saying that he's asking about the Trump thing, because, you know, that's been the big thing now, locker room talk,
right?
The locker room. So everybody now who's spent any time in the locker room has put Trump as, like, everybody now dizzy. Wait a minute, man. That ain't my locker room.
Yeah, we got to know what's going on in the locker room. so we can try to go to the source.
Right.
So someone asked Jeremy Lin, you know, did you hear Donald Trump's statement about locker room talk? And he kind of didn't want to go there, but he had an interesting answer, and this was it.
I mean, if you're asking me what he said, that's extremely vulgar. That's not something that's commonly said. Like, I mean, that's pretty, you know, disrespectful to women. And, that's definitely not a common thing. Like, we're not walking around in locker rooms. Everyone's talking like that. Trust me. I've been in a lot of locker rooms, and so whatever. I'm not going to get too much into it, but... you know, obviously, do I agree in any way with what he said? Not at all.
So he is another player who says that Donald Trump's definition of locker room talk, wherever he got that, Lin says, not in any locker room he's been in.
I think our sound guy, Kevin Keating, came up with a good idea. We should really do a skit. We don't do skits on Bill Rogan right. on Sport, but we should do something. We should ask a few people about locker room talk. Yeah,
what's locker room talk to you?
What does locker room talk to you mean? You know?
Right.
In the locker room.
Yeah, in the locker room. We'll be in the locker room, and Rice will shoot it. We'll say, we're in the locker room here, and we should have throwing, like, shoes and right, stuff right. like that.
Locker room talk is really just hip-hop, a future, you know, and right. music, hip-hop music in the locker room. That's locker room talk.
Locker room talk.
Which, you know, some right-wing people won't like that, so yeah, I'm sorry to tell you about that.
Unless they win the election.
Exactly.
But now you also went to the other side. Well, you went to Midtown. You went to Madison Garden, and you talked to the Knicks, right?
Right. And that's a whole different story, right? So the Knicks have high hopes. The fans are, mm-hmm. you know, Joakim Noah's in town.
Delusional.
Kristaps Porzingis' second year. Mm-hmm. Derrick Rose.
In California.
Hasn't been playing the last couple preseason games. He's dealing with his civil rape case in L.A., and that's supposed to wrap up pretty soon. From all accounts, doesn't look like Jane Doe, the plaintiff story, is all that tight. Doesn't seem that she's all that credible. So that's what the rumors are coming back. You know, that's what's being reported from that case.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see what happens.
Right.
You know, but like I said, it's a civil case, so it's about money
right,
at this
right,
point.
Right. But, you know, bottom line, if the Knicks win, it'll be case what? What case?
Exactly.
What did you do?
Exactly. He comes back and plays well.
Right.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
So, you know, I asked Carmelo Anthony last night. They played the Celtics in the preseason game at the Garden. I asked Carmelo, you know, Derrick Rose has been out for, you know, a couple of weeks, and I asked him how long he thinks it'll take for them to adjust once he gets back, and this is what he said.
I mean, hopefully he'll be back in the next couple of days. Hopefully we want him to play
you know, maybe the final two preseason games. But, I mean, the way that he played, I mean, he's been there the first couple of weeks of the training camp, and, you know, preseason and things like that. And, I mean, he'll come right back in. The way that he plays, he'll come right back in. We will have to adjust to him. The way that he played, the pace that he plays with, I think we'll have to adjust to him more than he will have to kind of adjust to us. We put some things in, but it wasn't nothing drastic that I don't think he wouldn't be able to pick up fast.
So Carmelo seems pretty confident. He seemed pretty confident. Derek can just jump back in.
Did you ask him to be on the show?
Nah, yeah, you know, I'm trying to ease my way into that.
Come on,
you know,
Jamal.
I'm trying to play it cool, you know. Yeah, right. You know, once we get real cool, I'll be like, you know, come on the show.
You got to get a big bottle of wine. I mean, apparently it's a wine. True. Although,
that's
what
true.
Kind of wine are we going to give him?
Right. You know? And I don't know if I should walk in the locker room and give him a big bottle of wine. It might be the last time they let me in there.
Yeah, well, just tell him, Bill Roden on sports, man. We just like, please, you know. Anyway, speaking of ball, man, we had a great interview with Kenny Anderson. So if you listen to this, that's going to be coming up a little later on. Kenny Anderson, the New York high school legend,
right.
Had a really fascinating interview with him. Talked about abuse and talked about a lot of stuff that I didn't really, frankly, know about.
Right.
So, you know, we're going to be looking at that down the road, right?
Yeah, great conversation, and that'll be up Thursday this week. So right. Definitely check that out. He was a great guest, very candid. He has a documentary coming out November 12th, Mr. Chibs. Definitely check that out. And based on what he told us, it sounds like it's going to be a pretty serious documentary.
Yeah. And, of course, you could join us next week on Bill Roden on Sports. He'll be here with the crew. I think we're going to have a couple of Olympians coming up. We're going to have an Olympic fencer and an Olympic swimmer. Coming up, talking Olympics and some other stuff. You just, we talk more about what it is. We talk about, you know, what it ain't. But anyway, listen, it's been great. We'll see everybody on the other side. Jamal, Kevin, Raisa. See you guys later. God bless.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.